Yeah. Hey, 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 everyone. We are here today with Len Johnson from Better Than Sex Restaurant. Len, welcome. Hey, he's got the shirt too.
Heck yeah, buddy. I'm in character.
It's official. It's official. Nothing's official unless there's an existing t-shirt. We said that when we started. So until there's a t-shirt, it's really not real.
Really? Seriously?
That is the best. So tell me, you're the founder of Better Than Sex.
I'm the co-founder. I got to give my wife a little bit of props, because if I don't mention her and she sees this, this is going to be, she'll take the t-shirt away.
maybe you should be talking to her. Jeez. Come on. Next time when we get make this the better podcast,
right?
We'll include your wife.
We'll dub her in.
Beautiful. That's what we'll do. We'll put maybe a hologram, Tupac hologram is like in the background.
She's right here talking to me.
Yeah. Well, we can go into many things. This is your wife.
That's my wife.
Right here. Oh, dude. So fill us in on Len. Len, we're going to ask a few questions. We want to know. Well, wait, you don't get to just riff. We want to know. How do you take your coffee, Len?
Ooh, I like actually espresso. So I like a mocha. I do four shots of espresso. It's really strong. A little bit of chocolate and a little bit of skim milk and lots of ice.
Oh,
that's how I start every day.
And then 37,000 push-ups and you jog in place for the next 20 minutes.
That, and then midway through any kind of shift or any kind of work I do, I crash. It's like, I'm good for 4 hours.
I got to say, it's probably one of the more extreme answers that I've gotten to the how do you take your coffee. Now, maybe this one, you'll be a normal guy. Pizza topping. What's your favorite? Where do you go?
I like sausage. I'm a sausage pizza guy. Wife's a vegetarian, so it's always half and half. So, well, and it works out for me because there's always the sausage always kind of dribbles over under her half. So I get more pizza that way.
It's nice how they do that. You know, I feel like the toppings do go on to the cheese.
A little bit to the other side. So that's your problem for being a vegetarian.
Yeah, you know what? Someday there'll be a cure for that. No, just kidding. The vegetarian's totally awful. So this isn't a typical question, but you strike me as a dessert first kind of guy. Am I nailing it? Or is
the camera adding 10 pounds to my face?
No, it's a suggestion that you're good times, Len.
I do eat a lot of dessert first. So that is true. And we eat dessert every time we go out to a restaurant too, despite the fact that that's what we do. So people always say that when they know us, when we go into a local restaurant, they'll look at you. Are you going to, you really want to see the dessert menu? I'm like, yeah, I want to see the dessert menu. I love desserts. We'll eat a smaller dinner to have dessert. So for sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So not exclusive, just a dessert lover in general and moving.
Pretty much. Yeah.
You don't have to worry about those other parts of the meal getting in the way.
So no, not at all.
You know, it would probably make sense for you to open a dessert-focused restaurant.
It wasn't that way at the beginning, though. I mean, that wasn't the plan from the very beginning when we found this. So, well, I worked for Darden Restaurants for a long time, for 7 years. I worked for Bahama Breeze.
Yeah.
So, and that's where I actually met my wife and co-founder. I was a waiter, trainer, and she was like a back office trainer. And so we worked for Darden for a really long time. And when we wanted to work for ourselves, you know, we originally going to do like a tapas kind of place. Then we looked at doing like a fondue kind of place. So dessert wasn't necessarily what we were going to do. But one night, the wife made this Oreo cake. Like, it was a monstrosity. It was like a thousand calories a bite kind of thing. And
had she ever come out with it?
What's that? No, she never made it. I was just like, man, I want something sweet because I do love desserts. And she's like, well, I'll go make you something. And she had this old recipe from her mom, this Oreo cookie cake thing. And she brought it out like a few hours later. I'm like, well, you know, how long is this thing going to take? It's got to be good. It was fantastic. And I'm like, wow, that's good. Can you do more of that? And she did. And she wrote all these recipes and saved all these. We still have the notebooks. This is like 20 years ago.
Wow.
So we still have the notebooks. And we pivoted. We're like, well, let's see if this can work. So we had parties at our house. We'd invite people over our house, feed you dessert with the wine and the same music that we have in our restaurant today and just see if it flew. And our parties started getting better and better and better. The first one, we had a couple people, then the second one. And finally we did a Valentine's Day party and the whole room in our house was full. We're like, we're gonna do this. This is how we're gonna do it. And so we pivoted to a dessert restaurant, but that wasn't even the plan from the beginning.
The best businesses come from demand, right? Like if the people want it, give it to the people.
Give it to the people, and the people wanted it. And then we found out that she had a knack for it. And it was something that we could start small ourselves because we first opened, it was a small restaurant. We might have had 15 tables and myself, she did the cooking. I had a buddy of mine that was our server and another buddy of mine that would come in and maybe do some dishes. And
I need a visual. We're like, Where are we when this is happening?
This is at the very beginning. This is like 2008. So I should back that up. But, you know, so it started out with humble beginnings and the dessert thing really worked because it's something that we can manage. You didn't need a lot of people to start. We opened up during the last recession in 2009. And, you know, it was kind of tough down here in the Keys and it just kind of, it all the pieces fell into place. And then we realized that we were cooking with gas. We're like, okay, we got something here.
Yeah. Whoa. And now we've evolved to past Oreo cakes and to the French kiss of berry.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And the berry naughty. How did those work into the fold after an Oreo cake?
Well, first off, all the names, I can't take the credit. I've only come up with a couple of names. So my wife handles all the naming of stuff. She's got this book called The Book of Filth. It literally has like 800 pages of sexual innuendo. And so when we come up with, and I'll elaborate more on those drinks in a bit, but when we come up with a recipe or something, we try to find some innuendo that kind of plays into the main ingredient. You know what I mean? Like, for example, we have a banana bazooka. Well, bazooka is a sexual term, if you will.
Say?
You know, or I think it's something to do with fellatio. You know, so the missionary crisp, you know, because people like apples and that's kind of a comforting basic type of thing. But to your question, like when we first opened, we didn't have drinks. We just had desserts, right? And we're like, well, is that going to be enough, man? Is that going to be enough to get the juices flowing, you know? And so we're like, we need another thing. So we got to figure out a way to get chocolate and caramel to stick on the rim of the glass of a wine glass. So that way you can pair the chocolate with the wine in one spot, right? And that's how that evolved. So the first one we did was a Cabernet, we called it the Choco Cab. And we went across the street to this like really crappy gas station and bought like this horrible cheap box wine and chocolate. And we drank it all one night. And finally at the end, after 6 hours of drinking, we figured it out. You know, we figured out how to get the chocolate to stay on the glass. And then that led into what you were saying. The French kiss is our version of French champagne with caramel and brulee sugar on the rim. And that's our number one seller for celebrations, you know, anniversaries, honeymoons, such. So
it's ridiculous. If folks listening haven't seen these drinks or gotten to experience them, you should check them out on the site because they are insanity when you look at them. It's something that like, it's something you're certainly known for. If you go, what?
Right.
99% of people are going to get a rimmed wine glass. They look so damn good.
Well, we call them rim jobs.
Oh, geez.
Or signature rim drinks. But, you know, they're affectionately known as rim jobs.
This is the guest play on that. Job. We're good. Jeez. So that's wild. It's such a cool concept that's so unique. And I've had experience. I've seen them. In Savannah, congratulations. Best late night restaurant.
They won that 2 years in a row, and they were a finalist for desserts and date night restaurant. And then in our Orlando locations, nominated for those same things right now. So we actively try to participate in each location, you know, finding a fringe magazine or publication that kind of our target audience would read. Yeah. And then always try to get nominated for these awards. But they're doing such a great job in Savannah. And we couldn't be more proud to have them as partners.
That's awesome.
And the Food Network's coming out to see him. I forgot the name of the show. The new Food Network star, he's doing like this baking thing. I have to get the guy's name. They just told me this last night. And I'm like, sweet. So they're coming in to film a Food Network segment in the Savannah location next month. So
Savannah is no easy town to open a concept in. It is a tourist destination. You must be successful. You must drive demand to succeed. And I know you have several locations that actually exist in destination type areas and you guys are killing it. And growth is what's next. That's how I hear it. what do you guys look for when you are looking for expansion and growth? Where do you go? Is it typically a Savannah type town?
You know, I think that that's evolving, especially when everything has happened in the market, with inflationary pressures and a potential downturn in the economy, especially with disposable income in restaurants.
Sure.
We tend to now look, Savannah is a great example. Obviously, you want foot traffic in a high density tourist destination. That's one of the two footprints that we look for. Key West, where I'm at now, is the other. We're in a major tourist zone. Everybody walks by. So then you're going to get the benefit of walking traffic, especially when they see that name. But the other locations that we look for is a little bit more affluent neighborhoods. Like our Orlando location is in an affluent neighborhood that's up and coming with a lot of young medical professionals, industries that have disposable income that can weather any kind of economic storm. So moving forward, we kind of shrunk our footprint a little bit. So, you know what I mean? We're at 2,000 square feet. You know, you can operate the whole business with 12 people, you know, because labor is a big issue. And then we try to stick them in more or close to affluent areas as possible. Yeah. And that seems to be working well, especially for the Orlando location.
Yeah. And I was talking to some folks that have been to your Savannah location, and the story they told me was they walked right out of the gray and right over to you. And that proximity and being able to be around where your actual audience exists.
Right. It's magic.
Yeah, it is. It is. It brings us to like audiences. How do you determine what type of franchisee will be successful, as well as where that franchisee can be successful? What do you look at?
Well, I mean, first off, you have to have passion for our brand. You know, we definitely want to know that that's the easy part, but it sounds easier. It's easier said than done. I will say that. Cause I mean, we get a lot of people that walk in here and go, oh, I want one of those in my market. You know, it's a shiny object syndrome, as we like to say. That's real pretty. I want one of those. So we really tend to look for people that have some sort of managerial experience in operating a business, or we also make it a requirement that you have to have, you know, full-time restaurant people in the organization. Cause we have seen the flip side and other concepts and things that we've been a part of. It seems so basic, but you gotta draw the line somewhere. And for us, it's like, it's that commitment to have excellent management, excellent leadership, you know, follow the plan.
Yep.
And it's not that you personally have to have restaurant experience. So, but you would have to make the commitment to find someone that's gonna run that operation, because, you know, our system is a little different. Like when you come to the front door here, you might see me. We don't have hosts and hostesses. It's whoever is the main manager of that location is the person that's running that door, running our reservation system, the first person that you see. We built that model. Like you come in, you know that guy or gal is running that thing.
Wow.
That's the person, that's the decision maker right then and there. And we have found that to be really helpful.
That's amazing.
And creating that emotional connection. You know, if guests are emotionally connecting with the brand, they spend 27% more. You know, we're big numbers people around here.
Yeah.
So that starts at the front, that starts with leadership and operations we got. Okay. If you've been in this business for a long time, it's not like you're reinventing the wheel. You got to give great service. You got to have great training. Yeah. Guys got to know the menu. You got to have standards and accountability. It's not rocket science. But the hard part is you got to have a leader that's committed to that. You got to have a leader that understands, even if you can't do it, you got to step off and get the appropriate people to do it. And you and I discussed this off camera before, like lateral leadership is our big challenge in these things, because you're not my employee. You're an owner of the business that happens to have something that I was a part of the creating. So we have to have that relationship of mutual respect. And I have to figure out a way to communicate to you when things aren't necessarily going the way that we want it to go.
Talk about a powerful customer experience. When you walk in the door, and the owner of the house greets of the house greets you as you walk in the door. Not someone who's there to help, though they may be just as great. The owner greets you. And that's really impactful. You guys do some really unique things, I know. I want to talk a little bit about the technology side of it too. You guys, you I would say, are not just leaning forward, but falling really far forward and doing amazing, innovative things. I know one of the cool aspects when I go to the restaurant, it's privacy, right? This is an intimate one-on-one moment. What's really cool is the ordering functionality of the app. And I can get into it from a my perspective, it's right. I don't have someone walking over every 5-10 minutes to check and see if I'm good. I appreciate that usually, but in your unique environment, elaborate a little bit on the technology side of things.
Well, first off, you mentioned privacy. And while that is not necessarily a technology thing, it does create the intimacy that we're looking for and that emotional connection of the guests to the brand. So all of our tables, or most of our tables, have a wall or a curtain on three sides. So like right now I'm sitting in a booth. There's a wall here, over here. There's a wall over here. And this is a four top, a table that seats four. But if I'm sitting here with three of my friends, I really can't see everybody else. And if I can, it's not like line of sight. So for that to work, to your point, we needed to kind of switch to iPad menus. So that have the app of the menu on it. So that way, when you're sitting here, you're pushing the iPad, it's got the categories. Our servers will walk you through it. You know, because at first it's like, holy, you walk in, you're overwhelmed. It's dark lights and they're shoving me in a corner behind a wall. And
no one puts baby in the corner.
Nobody puts Patrick in the corner. We do here. And then we give you this beautiful app where you can push and see the pictures and the descriptions and even the wines. You can have emailed to you, the tasting notes. Now we're going to evolve that to your point. Like falling forward, when we first started this thing back in 2009, we had menus and we gave you a little flashlight. Wow! And people used to love that. Oh, it would be annoying when you're flashing the guy next to you. So we're like, we got to get out of that. And then we went to backlit menus.
Flashing, you know, where you the flashlight. We have to pause here. When you're flashing the guy next to you, you have to be specific on this call. Not everyone, I have to back this up and say, with the flashlight.
Right. Thank you. With the flashlight.
Yes.
We are better than sex. Good point, man. You're on it. Well, you know, we've always been, to your point, a technology falling forward kind of brand, always trying to embrace things to make it more efficient, to give the guests a better experience. I think that the industry was headed this way anyway, and COVID was just an accelerator of it. So that's why you see a lot of companies embracing QR code technology, third-party apps and have blown up. That was happening anyway. COVID was the accelerator. And now the next accelerator, in my view, is the labor, you know? Like, how are you gonna get people to work? And well, we gotta figure out a way to do more with less. And so the QR code technology, which I'd like to see us move forward to next, is an opportunity where you could come in and use your own device and then get all the notes and videos on your own phone and you can take it with you. So you're in the restaurant, you can order from that phone or order through your server or take it with you. Now we're not there yet. That's the next step that we're looking to go to.
You know, this is an official advertising hat on. As you advertising hat. You say that QR code, I think about all that really powerful audience data that you get from someone viewing your menu. There's interaction data from ads.
Yeah.
You're talking about someone's butt who is in the seat in your building. And then they said, hey, I'm interested in your product. Imagine building an audience and a profile around that, right? It's powerful.
It really is. And then you'll get insights too. Like our iPad now can do that, where it can track like how many times, you mentioned the Berry Naughty, that's one of our signature wines. How many times that button hit in a night? Now we have a POS and we can track all that data too. But we can also, with QR code technology, like you're saying, now we can get information where we can get you on an email list and work on different ways to make you a brand ambassador, get you coming back more. And we're working on that as well.
I was just going to say, gosh, this opens the door to a full loyalty conversation.
Exactly.
How frequently do your visitors come back? Your customers, they come, they have an amazing experience. I imagine this gets worked into a date night rotation. How often do you try to drive customers back in store? And I know the answer is as often as possible, but what are we looking at?
It's obvious that because statistically, our guests will come back 1.7 times every 6 months.
Oh, beautiful.
Okay, so we're looking to improve that number. And we could track that through our reservation system. We can see now that we can't really track walk-ins. So I think that there's an area of opportunity too. Like if you walk in, we don't like get your name and number put in the system. We're just too busy. If, you know, that's another area of opportunity. I think when technology, if somehow I can capture your information as a walk-in, we'll be able to really kind of see that data. I think those numbers would be higher. Wow. But we've also had some guests that have been here like 30, 40 times in a year. Now, those are our super fans. You've ever read that book, Superfan?
Yeah.
So we have a fair share of those. And those, we handle loyalty a little different. We don't have, per se, like an app or any of that set up yet. We're going to get there because we're about to launch our new email marketing campaign. Oh, but yeah. What we do is in the system, I could track, all right, Patrick's been here. I can see the guest profile. He's been here 10 times. Again, having your main general manager or owner present, we do a table touch on those. Like there's different numbers. So I'm coming over to you. I'm like, hey, dude, thank you for coming in. You've been here 10 times. And I'll bring you a complimentary glass of champagne and we'll toast you and we'll make you feel extra special. So that's kind of how we handle that now. But to your point, I would love to see that a little bit more automated so that way we don't miss people, because you don't want to miss people. You want to make people feel special.
Yeah.
Especially if you come in all the time.
No, of course. That sounds really exciting. Also, got to be careful though. What if they're bringing 10 different people, Len? What if it's there? What if it's someone else they've brought the ninth time?
Oh, we've had a guy in our Orlando location that does that, but we feel that he's bringing in call girls because I mean, this guy's a little older. He's older than me, old kind of guy, but he comes in with the most beautiful women. He's one of the guys that's been in there like 38 times this year. We're looking at, and he comes in with somebody different every time. We never ask him, but it's a good point.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, what's up here, man? You're the luckiest son of a gun alive.
Or maybe he knows people that have good taste in desserts.
That's what I was going to say. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
I know that's where we're headed. Yeah. Jeez, loyalty is something that, gosh, we have just gone into loyalty that you're focused on. We've gone into hiring and labor.
Yeah.
It's solving for that. Jeez, I don't want to be the one who brings up the third crazy head, but supply chain. Do you guys?
Ooh.
Yeah.
What's yeah, that's there? Been a big challenge.
Yeah. Well, what has been the biggest audible? I don't want to hear the bad. I want to hear the good.
Well, you know, there's some things you just have to adapt. So one of the biggest thing is we preach adaptability. You have to be fluid, and we try to maintain an excellent relationship with all of our reps. For example, our Cisco reps are like God. So if they come rolling in the door, they're automatically VIP. Awesome. So what we try to do is we take what we do with our own team and our own culture, and we apply that to our vendors. And then because they're getting hammered, not just from us, they're getting hammered from everybody, right? So we're just trying to be in the front of their minds and how to do that is treating with respect. Understand that sometimes things don't happen. And then our executive chef now is working on backups for the backup. So, you know, if I'm out of one product, that's well and good, but let's make sure that we have all of our backups aligned at all the locations. So that way, yeah, if they're out of this particular brand of cream cheese, which cream cheese was a big issue a couple of months ago, man, we were scrambling. We were driving everywhere for cream cheese. I don't know what happened, but you know, then tasting recipes and planning it out to make sure that you have a backup and then a backup for the backup. So that way all of our products have three. That way, if you can't find it three or four times, you're kind of screwed anyway. You know, you're going to have to adapt.
Right.
So that's the main thing that we preach is adaptability and making sure that we're always on top of it. We have a great relationship. Our Cisco rep will let me know, hey, there's going to be a problem coming with cream cheese.
Yeah.
You know, you got to build those relationships. And I know a lot of people because I hear them, you know, I hear my Cisco rep, you know, other chefs just barking at it. You know, well, they're under stress too. You know, everybody's under a lot of stress when it comes to supply chain, and you just got to treat with respect, have backups for the backups, and be adaptable to change.
Len, we've talked several times. I got to tell you, I'm not at all surprised that respect and niceness and treating people how they should be treated and how you'd like to be treated yourself is a priority at your organization. No surprise at all. I wish I could show you my surprise face. This is my not surprise.
Is that not it? Oh, okay.
This is my, I knew that.
With your advertising hat on.
Yeah, I didn't know. Advertising hat back off. You said something really cool a few minutes ago, and we touched on it for 10 seconds, but QR codes, they're pretty polarizing. People love them. They may hate them. They solve a lot of problems and they serve a lot of needs. So what do you envision for QR codes?
Well, and I've seen some of those reports too, where like some of the guests just don't feel you're connected, right? And our main job is I need you to connect with this brand. You're going to spend more. And that's how I make you a super fan. Sure. You could still do it. And when I'm saying QR codes, I'm just saying that you'll have it on the table. This.
Don't get soft on me here. You're getting
I'm getting a little soft. You're still going to have service.
Okay.
You're just going to change how that service operates. Okay. Like, we already know statistically, if you don't greet a table within 2 minutes, your tip declines 2% per minute after.
Oh, man.
Right. So how do you do it? So then the person that seats you now does the greet. Right. I could talk to you instead of holding a menu or looking down or rushing you to a table. Yeah. So what we plan to do is just modify the service a little bit. So you're getting your greet, a little bit of information about the restaurant, about our popular dishes, about this, about that, before you even sit down. So that way that greet's already taken care of. And with that QR code sitting there, you put your phone on it, and then your server's still going to come up. Hey, I'm Len. Welcome in, blah, blah, blah. Have you been here before? We always ask, have you been here before? Hey. Tell you a little bit about the story. We're trying to make that connection. Just so you know, the menu's right here. Put your phone right there. You'll be able to order when you're ready. I'm still here for questions, and I'm just circulating. So what that's going to do, especially in some of our markets where the servers are like $16, $70 an hour, especially in California, you can eliminate one, or at least have still high level of service by just taking some of the service steps and assigning them to the seater, and your floor manager could come around and answer questions. And it's just one big moving circle. So the challenge is you got to maintain the service with the technology.
True. Okay. I like the balance. You're in good company with me.
Well, we haven't done it yet. So in theory, it'll work that way. We'll see.
Yeah. it makes sense to me. I'm with you. We talk a lot of times about things that may be new/unique or may fit certain brands and don't fit others. So I always like to jump into it because there's always that unique need. And I know for a fact you have a unique concept. So where do you typically find your customers? Is this word of mouth, or is this
our whole business is word of mouth? It's crazy. We've tracked that down. Literally 86% of the people that have come here have been told to come here by somebody else, or they saw a 5-star review. Wow. So we focus our there's a saying that we have around here. You can't outspend bad operations with marketing. You know what I mean? You gotta hone in on the operations. We are stickler for that. That's my wife and I are from Darden, where it was structure, and we brought that structure here. You got to win on the floor, on the court, if you will.
Yeah.
That's how it started. Like, we make sure that we check back at every table. We ask you, do you love your stuff? If you don't love it, we come. We're there following the statistics. We try to get to the table and greet you in 2 minutes. All the things that are little needles that move your experience to that 5-star, we focus in on. And then the atmosphere, the music, it all goes together. So that when you walk out, you're like, whoa, hey man, that was pretty cool. That was a little different. And that's what we hear the most. A local told me I had to go there. Or I walked by, and then we get the walk-ins that walk by, especially in Key West and Savannah, like you're saying, they come in like, oh my God, I'll have to come back. You know what I mean? Yes. So we really pound home the operations side of it, knowing that I can spend $1,000 a day on marketing, but if we suck executing, it's not going to matter.
That's priceless. To be able to say that, did you say 86%?
About 86%
of your customers
of first time guests.
That's a
big number, right? I'm talking about first time guests. How did you hear about us? And our marketing girls is honing in on that to make so we can even have more statistics on how do the walk-ins feel about it? Like I told you before, I don't know. Like we can talk to a walk-in. What's that?
Yeah. My mind's blown. I'm looking at my phone here. It's June 24th, 2022. And you're telling me that this is the truth here, that 86% of people that have an experience with you today want to leave, and they have a great thought, but they're so compelled that they tell someone else to come in. That's insane. Yeah. You can't walk into any organization and get an 86% smile rate. Much less, I'm going to smile and then use my voice to tell someone else to go there. Man, congratulations. That's insane. That's wild. You guys said.
Well, I mean, we also take our reviews seriously, too. I mean, so the reviews statistically can back that up. We've been hovering at a 4.7 and a 4.8 overall average, especially here in Key West for 13 years.
Congrats.
So, your reviews can back that up by just looking at the analytics. We use an online reputation service, too. We send out surveys. And so we have, different data points that we look to gain insight of, you know, just how impactful was that first experience. We're always shooting for 90%. Our goal is 9 out of 10. We know that it's impossible to get 10 out of 10. Not everybody's going to like what you do. You know, you got to deal with that. You got to deal with the naysayers.
Yeah.
But if you're committed to like, we can get to 9 out of 10 because, you know, we're close. If we can do that consistently, then you're going to, you know, you're definitely going to build your revenue year over year, which we've done here at Key West. And Savannah's proof positive. They've been around for what, 4 years, and they're the busiest of all the locations.
Geez. So how long does it take to get a new location open? If I'm obviously everyone's going to hear this, be super interested. You guys have crazy great stuff going on. What's the timeline when you apply and you find real estate? How does this work?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, it should take about 270 to 280 days. I think that's what we have in our agreement, but we're going to probably have to extend that out a little bit because of all the shortages that we're experiencing getting materials. So yeah, you know, from soup to nuts, you should be able to do it in 8 months.
Wow, that sounds exciting. And how would someone get a hold of you to just chat about this opportunity?
Through you.
No. No. Through you. What the, I don't want to sell
better than sexkeywest@gmail.com. Just send me an email.
There we
better
go.
Better than sexkeywest@gmail.com. That is our Key West location email base. But we have people that look at that. And then when we get franchise interest, then I have our guy that vets them.
Nice. You may have some fan mail coming that way too.
Yeah.
I'm sure all the listeners are going to be like, I want a Lamb t-shirt. I saw you.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. Hey,
good doing it. Well, Len, this has been awesome. Thank you for coming to Locally Perfected. I think next episode, we're actually having Elon Musk and Barack Obama hash out the QR code. So perfect. Ooh. Intro. Yeah.
Oh,
I know. Right. So that's next episode.
A good company, man. I'm a good company.
Yeah, great company. Len, you're the man. Better than sex. Go check it out. They've got some crazy stuff, some amazing menu items. And I've met a lot of the team over there. They're also pretty awesome people.
They are. We do like to surround ourselves with great people.
Rock and roll, Len. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Peace out.
See you next time.